What up, Doc Squad? I see that you are still here listening to the High Ticket Doc Podcast, and I absolutely love that for you. There is a lot of great content here. However, I did want to let you know that we are in a new location under a new name. I want to encourage you to pull up your favorite podcast app, go to the search bar, and search for the Doctor Coach School Podcast. If you love this podcast, then trust me, we are leveling up our transformational coaching and everything that we talk about on this podcast in the Dr. Coach School Podcast. So join me over there. Listen, feel free to binge listen to as much as you want here, but also for brand new episodes every single Monday at 5 a.m., join me on the Dr. Coach School Podcast. As soon as you pull it up, make sure you hit subscribe so you never miss an episode. Peace and love. Hello and welcome to the Productive on Purpose podcast. Are you a high-achieving woman of color who struggles with imposter syndrome, procrastination, and self-sabotage? Are you tired of going to bed each night hoping that tomorrow will be a better day, only for it to be more of the same? Are you sick of empty affirmations that make you feel good but don't actually lead to change? And are you over being shamed and yelled at to do the work with no insight as to how to get it done? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then friends, you are in the right place. I am your host, Dr. Kimmy, an award-winning, board-certified physician and professor. I am also your purpose coach. Here on the POP Podcast, we are about actual transformation. This podcast will provide actionable strategies to help you walk in your purpose. Let's get started. Hello, POP Squad. Welcome to episode one of the Productive on Purpose podcast. Thank you so much for being here. I just want to say that if you have taken the time out to listen to these episodes, to download them, to subscribe, like, y'all are my squad, y'all are my people, and I'm so excited to provide this for you guys. I mean, it's just such an amazing feeling to be able to connect with you guys on this level through a podcast. I am a big podcast listener. I love podcasts. And so I just love the fact that we get to do this every week with each other. So this is really great. I am coming down off of an amazing high yesterday. Last night I hosted my very, very first masterclass, and it was called a habit board party. And basically the entire premise of it was we sat down and we brainstormed habits for the new year, and not just like brainstorming them, but actually coming up with actionable strategies to implement these habits. And it was amazing. I had a small but very engaged group of women it was beyond. So the premise of it essentially is that it's an anti-vision board party. So we are getting rid of this idea of vision boards and putting up pictures of yachts and mansions and sculpted bodies. But then we put up the vision board and we have no way of actually implementing any of these strategies, right? Or actually getting to this vision. So we took some time to brainstorm what our actual vision was, but then build on the habits necessary to get us to that vision. If you are interested in watching the replay of this masterclass, I have a special treat for you because I do have the replay available for you. There is also a workbook associated with it so that you can go through and you can follow along and build these habits yourself as well. So please go to productivepurpose.com. That's productivepurpose.com. And you'll be able to click on the link that mentions the habit board party. And you'll be able to download this masterclass and watch it. And I would love to hear your feedback on it. So far, I've gotten amazing feedback from the ladies that were on. They said that the habit board party was a success. They felt like it was very helpful for them, and they feel like it was very doable. Like, it wasn't super overwhelming, that they were able to get through it and do it, and that it's going to take them into the new year successfully. So I am excited about this, guys. Okay, so today's episode, this is episode number one. So I figured I would give you guys background on me. Like, who is Dr. Kimmy? Like, why should you be listening to me at all about any of this stuff, right? And I mentioned in episode zero that we would be doing something called Profiles and Purpose. This podcast is going to be mostly solo podcasting. I am going to be coming every week with a different topic that we're going to discuss together. However, there will be instances when I have guests on, women who are high achieving women of color who are fully walking in their purpose, because that's the whole point of this podcast. And I will title that Profiles in Purpose. And so today we're going to get started with our very first profile and purpose, but it's going to be about me. because I am a high achieving Black woman, and I feel like I am now for the very first time in my life, fully walking in my purpose. And I could not say that for years and years and years, but I can say that confidently now. And so I want to share with you guys my story. How did I get to this point? For you to understand why I'm so passionate about this idea of walking in purposeful abundance, and why I'm so passionate about building habits and overcoming imposter syndrome and all the things we're going to talk about on this podcast, you have to understand where I came from. And guys, nothing I'm about to tell you is an exaggeration. In fact, I might be underdoing it a little bit, but I'm telling you, when I say I was a hot mess, y'all, I was a hot mess. So let's take it all the way back to the beginning. I want to apologize for a little bit of raspiness in my voice. I'm getting over a cold, but I didn't want that to stop me from recording this episode. So bear with me. I may have to take breaks to take a sip of water, things like that. And as I mentioned, I do not edit this podcast. So we're just going to be in it together. All right. So I'm going to take you all the way back to the beginning. And my story starts in Jamaica. Now, I was not born in Jamaica. I was born here in the good old United States of America. However, my mother is a huge part of my story and a huge part of who I am as a person. So my story cannot start without starting with my mother. My mother was born in Jamaica. She was born to, she was the middle child, the middle of five children, actually seven children, but two of them passed away while they were children, while they were babies. And my mother was the middle child. She was born to two ministers in the church. My grandfather was actually the bishop of the entire Jamaican diocese of our church. So church was a huge part of her life growing up. She finished high school and was always very studious. I'm told by my aunts and my uncles that my mom was basically like a bookworm. And I say was because she has passed away. And may she rest in God's heavenly peace. And I'll explain that whole thing when we get to it. And y'all, my story is long, so we may have to break this up into two parts, because we'll see. I'll play it by ear. We'll see. So my mother, after she graduated from high school, she decided to move to the United States to pursue her education. And she had a dream of becoming a nurse. So my mother moved to the United States, and she chose New Haven, Connecticut, because we had some family friends in the church who had already left Jamaica and were living in New Haven. So it was an easier transition for her. I say easier because it wasn't an easy transition at all. My mother struggled, y'all. Like, she like lived at one point at the YMCA in like a one room dorm. She was a janitor. She was a cleaning, like the maid at the hotel, making the beds and everything. My mother did that for years, while she put herself through college. And so she put herself through college and she got her bachelor's degree in nursing, at Western Connecticut State University, and then got a full scholarship to, her master's program. However, her master's program was at UCLA in California. While she was in Connecticut, she met and married my father. And my mother's name is Hannah. Her name is Hannah Hunter, and my father's name is John Hunter. So they met, they were married. Shortly after that, they had their first child, my son. My brother, John, my mom's son, my brother, John, and they moved to California in order for my mother to pursue her education. Now, this part of the story is a little fuzzy for me. I know some of the details, and y'all, we're family now, okay? If you're here, if you're listening, you're in the Pop Squad, the Productive on Purpose Squad. Like, I'm not gonna like really sugarcoat things or hide things. Like, you're just gonna get the real deal. So I'm about to put all my business out there on Front Street. So you're about to know all the tea, all the tea. So, you know, grab a cup of tea if you want, because I'm about to spill all the tea from my family line. And I have no problem doing that because I hope that it can encourage you and encourage someone. So my father was a raging alcoholic. He was a terrible human being at that point. My brother is 2 years older than me. In fact, my brother is 2 years, 2 months, 2 days, and 2 hours older than me. It's kind of crazy. But my brother's 2 years older than me. And when my brother was two, he was like every two-year-old boy, right? Like, he was rambunctious. My father used to essentially like beat him to a pulp all the time. And he was doing this while he was intoxicated. So, but I don't say that to excuse him, because I mean, there's no excuse for beating a child, and abusing a child at all, whether or not you're drunk. So he gets no like extra credit points for the fact that he was intoxicated. I'm just letting you know that he was intoxicated. My mom, again, juggling going to school, working, dealing with my drunk father, and then two kids. I came along in 1982, and that was a really, really stressful period of time for my mother. My mother eventually got so fed up, and my mother is my hero, guys. When I tell you my mother is my absolute hero, this is just one of the reasons why. So check out what she did. She, one day, while my father was outside of the house, collected all of his bottles of alcohol, all the whiskey, all the rum, all the beer, everything. Everything. And she poured it all down the toilet and flushed it. And then threw away all the bottles. When he came home, there was nothing. And my mom said, "You know what? That's it. I'm done. Get out. Get out." So she kicked my father out of the house. But my mom is a gangster, y'all. Like, not only did she kick him out, before she kicked him out, she poured out all his alcohol. So he couldn't like try to like get drunk and then be like, she was just like, done, done, done. She was like, "I'm choosing myself and I'm choosing my children. You need to go." And my father told me this later as I was a young adult, that my mom essentially told him, "I can raise my children better by myself than I can with you beating them, et cetera, et cetera." He never beat me because I was still a baby at that point. But, you know, my older brother, my mother was scared that I would grow up and he would continue this whole, like, you know, process of abuse, this whole cycle of abuse. So she kicked him out of the house. Yes, she did. And he left. And so my entire life, I was 2 years old when he left, when she kicked him out. My entire life, I have not known myself to live with my father. My father's always lived somewhere else. Initially, he was living in California, and there would be days where he would come to school to pick us up. And I loved my father. I was enamored with my father. I thought, because again, I didn't learn about this abuse stuff until I was much older, really until I was an adult. So I didn't know. I knew that there was like alcoholism and I knew some of the stuff, but I didn't know about the abuse and how he was abusing my brother. I loved my father. When he would come to school to pick me up, like those were like the highlights of my entire week. It was very sporadic. It didn't happen often, but y'all, it was just everything. He would come and he would always bring us donuts. And I want you to stick a pin in that to remember that. He would always bring donuts when he came to pick us up at school. There's a reason that that's significant for me, because I really feel like some of my issues with like having a sugar addiction, because I do have a sugar addiction, and it's a serious problem in my life that I'm overcoming, but it's still an issue that I struggle with. I think a lot of it has to do with those days of my father and like associating happiness and seeing my father with sugar, like every single time. So like stick a pin in that. I'll do a whole episode about my sugar addiction and how I feel like it came to be and how I'm overcoming it. But like, just remember that. So, eventually the visits got farther and farther spaced out. So I would see him less and less. We would sometimes, go to his house or he would come to our place, but it got less and less until eventually he wasn't really coming around very much anymore. I remember him calling one day, and he called, and this was before cell phones. This was before portable phones, right? So this was in the early 80s, or I guess mid to late 80s at that point. And I remember I overheard this because when he called, I picked up the phone and my mother picked up the phone in the other room, but she didn't know that I was listening. So I was listening to this conversation. So I heard everything. So I heard my mother ask my father, why is it that you, when you come to pick up the kids, you only pick up John? So he would do this thing where he would come and pick up John and take him somewhere, take him to a ball game, or I'm not exactly sure where they were going. But he would pick him up, and I wouldn't be able to go. My mother was like, well, why do you do that? And he said, well, she's a girl. I don't know what to do with girls. I don't know what to do with a little girl. Stick a pin in that, because the fact that I was probably like 5 when that conversation happened, and I remember it like, I know exactly where I was standing. I know exactly what I felt like. It felt like a sucker punch in the chest. I felt rejected at that point. And it was from that point on that my relationship, in terms of being fully enamored with my father, changed. I still loved my dad until his dying day. My dad has also passed away. He passed away in 2007. But prior to that, I was like a daddy's girl, like wanted to be in his presence at all times. And after that, I got a little cool on my dad, meaning I was just kind of like, I loved him to death. I loved him and I wanted him to be a part of my life and I wanted to make him proud and I wanted to be daddy's little girl. But I was also like, all right, dude, I mean, you know, you're not really into me, so I'm not going to really be into you. And to my mother's credit, she never, ever spoke bad about my father, ever, ever. And I mean, my dad was what you would call nowadays a deadbeat. Like, even to my dad's credit, so to back up a little bit, to my dad's credit, from the day my mother poured out his alcohol in, must have been 1984, to the day he died in 2007, he never touched another bottle of alcohol. So to my father's credit, like, that is not easy to quit cold turkey on an addiction. That is not easy. So I give my father credit for that. However, over and above that, he never really supported myself or my brother or my mom. He would send like $20 on our birthday and that'd be it. At one point, my father was much older than my mother. At one point, he started getting a social security check. And because we were his children, we would get a portion of that. So a portion of that would be sent to my mother. And he said, well, that's him supporting us. So he never, of his own free will and accord, supported us or supported my mother at all.
Thank you for listening to the Productive on Purpose podcast. Now, take the next step. Head on over to www.productivepurpose.com to download your free Planning for Procrastinators workbook. It's time to start walking in our purpose, y'all. I'll catch you on the next episode.
Okay, that was hilarious. Okay, I'm still getting used to this whole like podcasting thing, and I realized that my outro music was linked and was playing. So I apologize for that. We'll just make that a little bit of a transition point, I guess. So back to my mother. So when my father left, my father ended up leaving. He moved to Atlanta, Georgia, and he stayed there until he died. So he left California completely. And I never really had a great relationship with my father after that. So imagine the daddy issues, right? Like, you've heard about women with daddy issues. Like, that was me. I had serious abandonment issues. I had serious self-esteem issues because I felt like I was rejected by the one man that I adored more than anyone else in this whole world. My mother was the strongest and when I say my mother was the most loving and caring and kind individual I've ever had the pleasure of meeting. I am not exaggerating. I know she's my mom, and I know everyone says that their mom is so great. Y'all, my mom was everything. She was everything, and she was our everything, and she had to be because my father left and she was doing the single mom thing. Now, when we were in California, things were not bad. My mother was working as a public health nurse. She ran a clinic at the Head Start in Compton. So I grew up in Inglewood, y'all. Inglewood. In fact, I grew up on North Inglewood Avenue. Okay? North Inglewood Avenue. North Inglewood Avenue is where the television show on HBO Insecure takes place. So you know in Insecure, the apartment complex where Issa Rae lives, the Dunes. The Dunes was directly across from my apartment building. That apartment building is no longer there, but my apartment building was directly across from the Dunes. I looked out of my window and saw the Dunes every morning. Every morning. I went to Highland Elementary School. So y'all can Google this. Google Earth. You'll see that Highland Elementary School is right around the corner from the Dunes. So I grew up on that street. That is where I'm from. So it's so funny now when I look back and I see, or like look now on Instagram, and people travel to California and they take pictures of themselves like in front of the dunes. I'm like, why is this a tourist spot? Like, I don't understand. Like, it was not growing up. So I grew up in Inglewood. My neighborhood it was Inglewood in the 80s. We didn't wear red. We didn't wear blue. Because you didn't want to be affiliated with, you know, being mistaken of being affiliated with the Crips or the Bloods. Like, that's where I grew up. Okay. But at the time, even though there was a lot of, it wasn't the best in terms of the amount of crime in the neighborhood, there was really a sense of community. I really loved where I grew up. I loved my elementary school in terms of the teachers and everything. And I'll tell you about an elementary school in a second, because elementary school is also something you have to stick a pin in. And when you start to hear kind of the things I've struggled with as an adult, you'll see why my elementary school experience was so pivotal. But I loved living in Inglewood. The only thing was that, like, because of, like, the gang stuff, and like I said, it wasn't, like, completely crazy, but there were moments. I have definitely seen dead bodies. I'm talking about when I was a kid. So some of, like, my anxieties with regard to, you know, being left alone have to do with my father and, like, abandonment issues, and some of it has to do with the fact that I would, like, look out of my window and see, you know, police tape and blood splattered. I mean, this was my life. And my mother did the best that she could. Things were not great, but she made ends meet. And I never felt like we were, at that point in the Inglewood days, in the early days, in the Inglewood days, I never felt like we were poor. I felt like we were lower middle class. That's just how it felt. So I wasn't always getting new shoes, but I didn't have a situation where I didn't have shoes or had holes in my shoes. I would have, like, hand-me-down shoes or whatever, but, like, it felt like ends were meeting. Like I said, my mother was a public health nurse, and that is also pivotal for me. I ended up being a pediatrician, but a pediatrician in an underserved community, because that's what I saw. Like, my mother could have worked anywhere. She had a master's degree from UCLA. She could have worked anywhere, but she decided to work with underprivileged children. I hate the term underprivileged, because I just hate that term, but for lack of a better word, underserved communities, indigent communities, low income communities in Compton. So Compton, y'all, Compton in the 80s. I want you to, everything that you've heard, everything you've seen in movies is all true about Compton in the 80s. Compton, she worked at the Head Start in Compton. Y'all, when I tell you, I have stories. I have been shot at in drive-bys. Like, I remember clearly, as clear as day, walking into Payless. I was probably 6 or 7, walking into Payless in Compton, probably after work one day, or I remember it being daylight. And I remember about to walk into the Payless, this car slowed down. And when you knew, when a car slows down, like, we had drills like this in school. We had, like, shooting drills, like, everyone has, like, fire drills, and now we have active shooter drills. We had drive-by shooting drills. So, like, I knew exactly what to do. As soon as the car started driving by, I dropped down and I covered my head, and we all did that. And I remember the shots ringing above my head. And he shot into the Payless, into the store, but he didn't actually hurt anyone or kill anyone. And I remember us, like, he was gone. He got up. We got up. And then we went shopping for our shoes. Like, that was Compton in the 80s. Yes. and that's where my mother chose to work, because she wanted to give back. When I tell you, my mother was the most selfless individual I've ever, ever had the pleasure of meeting. Like, she was my hero. So elementary school. Oh my goodness. I was a bright child, and I started reading. My brother and I were both very bright. My brother started reading when he was 3, like, way before I even did. But my brother's brilliant, but he, like, in the early days was, like I said, a very rambunctious child, but he's still brilliant. I love my brother. But I was very bright, and early on, it was identified that I was reading at a very high level. So I remember in third grade, they gave me a series of reading tests, and I just kept passing them, kept passing them. And then they determined that I was reading on a high school level. I was reading on like a 10th or 11th grade level, and I was in third grade. And I went to a year-round school, and for some reason, they had like concocted this whole idea of like, well, what we'll do is like a few days a week, we'll bus her to the high school so that she can, you know, sit in with the high school, like English and reading classes, and then we'll bus her back and then she can go to all the rest of her classes. My mom was like, you will do no such thing. You will do no such thing. I think they were trying to build up like a hype, like a news story around me, like this third grade black girl from Inglewood who reads on a high school level, that and we have to bus her to you know, Inglewood High. And my mom was like, no, she is not ready for that. She is in third grade. She is 8 years old. She will stay at her elementary school. Stuff like that is what makes my mom so dope, because somebody else, another parent, maybe even me, like if I'm being honest, would be like, oh yeah, let me bust my 8-year-old to high school just so, you know, she could end up on the evening news. But my mom was like, no, like she's not ready for that. So my mom always, when I say my mother put her children, she put God first and then her children were second her entire life. And I'm just so grateful for her. So in any case, they came up with a plan. And then they wanted to bus me to the, at that point was called junior high school. In California, we had junior high school. So elementary went to sixth grade. So they wanted to bus me to the junior high school. My mother said, absolutely not. You're not sending my 8-year-old to junior high a few days a week. That's ridiculous. Then they wanted to put me, okay, let's keep her in the elementary school, but let's put in the sixth graders, with the sixth graders. Because elementary school in California at that time went up to sixth grade, not fifth grade. And then junior high was seventh and eighth grade. My mom said, no, you're not putting my third grader with a bunch of sixth graders who, you know, I think they're at the top of their game because they're at the top of, you know, they're the, like the big man on campus. Like, you're not doing that. So the compromise was I went to the fifth grade class every day for reading. And I would go to the fifth grade class and they were reading books that were like on my reading level, but way more mature than I was at the time mentally. And so that's why I'm so grateful to my mother for putting her foot down and saying, no, you will not send my child to to the high school. Like, what? So anyway, they were reading the autobiography of MLK and all these different books. And I just was like, what is going on? Like, I am not ready for this. Like, they were talking about it was the biography, but when he got shot, and then I'm thinking about the shootings that were happening outside of my house. It was just a lot of stress and a lot to deal with as an 8-year-old. They also did this thing where they had an assembly. So they had an assembly every year, and they announced to the class that, you know, Kimberly Hunter, that's my maiden name. Kimberly Hunter is a third grader and she is reading on a high school level and she sits in on the fifth grade classes, right? And they like called me on stage and presented me with this like award. It was like this whole thing. Y'all, when I tell you the girls in my class, they were already not really feeling me because my teachers really liked me. I was soft spoken. I was really tall. And I was smart. So my teachers loved me, right? And I didn't go out of my way. I wasn't one of those like annoying like teacher's pets like that like tries to suck up to the teacher, which is another reason they loved me. They loved me. They just really like always would like encourage me and like, you know, oh, you know, Kim is so great and blah, blah, blah. So the girls in my class, y'all, they hated my guts. And I was bullied incessantly from second grade up until fourth grade. And we left California and moved to South Florida when I was in fourth grade. I'm talking about they would, you know, invite me to play the games with them, to play double Dutch. Double Dutch was huge. I was good at double Dutch too. But double Dutch was like a big thing. And then they'd laugh at me like while I was jumping rope. I was fat. I was an overweight child. But I was still pretty like athletic. Like I could get down. I could do my double Dutch. I could do my cheerleading because cheerleading was a big thing back then. But they would like laugh at me while after they invited me to do those things. And because I'm like a people pleaser at heart, I would be so excited. Like, yeah, I'm going to go hang out with my friends. And then they'd be sitting there laughing at me. They would call me Mr. Kimberly. Like they did everything to just like make my life a living hell. I was a wreck. Elementary school, I did really, really well academically, but socially I was a wreck. I had friends, but my friends didn't really stick up for me per se, like in public. They would just like in private say like, that's messed up. So I remember when we were leaving California to move to Florida, my grandfather had just passed away, and my grandmother wanted to move from Jamaica because she was in her older age. She wasn't able to fully care for herself, but she didn't want to live all the way in California. She wanted to live somewhere that was very similar to Jamaica. And so that's clearly South Florida. South Florida is basically like Jamaica. So, and we had a lot of folks here. They had a lot of folks here from Jamaica that they knew, like family friends. And so the decision was made. My mother bought a house with my grandmother in South Florida. So we were leaving California. I'll never forget my teacher, Miss McGee. Shout out to me. I need to find some of my elementary school teachers. Like they are the reason that I wasn't like a complete like depressed mess. Because they encouraged me and they built me up so much. So my teachers had all my quote unquote friends, basically the whole class, write me like going away cards. And I'll never forget the cards that a couple of the girls wrote were just so mean and so nasty. One of them, I'll never forget, said, bye, I guess I'm going to miss you even though I never liked you. And that came from Edith. And I still remember her name. Her name was Edith. And she was like the ringleader of like all the mean girls. So it was Edith. There was Lakeisha. It was just... Elementary school was not fun. Elementary school in Inglewood. So I moved to South Florida and things got better. Elementary school was better. But I'm gonna let you know why things got better. And this is kind of where it all started in terms of the self-sabotage and the imposter syndrome. Things got better because I literally downplayed my smarts. I was no longer interested in being the first in the class. I was the top of my class in elementary school in Inglewood. The top of my class. I would outshine everyone on everything. All the spelling bees, like everything. And I was, even though I knew that's why these girls didn't like me, I wasn't going to let them stop me from doing what I needed to do to be my best and to do the best that I could. And it was not until I got those cards, those mean cards, right? This is 9-year-old Kim, right? So 9-year-old Kim gets cards from her friends and she's so excited and then reads the cards and it's just like a knife in the chest, a complete knife in the chest. So I was just like, oh my goodness, what in the world? And so From then until last year, basically, I did enough so that I could be seen as being one of the bright kids, one of the smart kids, one of the competent kids. But I was no longer interested in being number one or being at the top. I downplayed my intellect heavily. To the point that when I came here and was in fourth grade and was before they tested me, they asked me what was the last thing that I did in elementary school in California. And when I told them, they put me in like just like the basic, actually they put me in like the sort of like the remedial classes. And then they gave me tests, and then they were like, whoa, 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 this girl is not at a remedial level. Like, what are we doing? Like, and then they bumped me up to like all the advanced like honors classes. But I didn't even, and I don't even know if I was fully cognizant of why I was doing this, because this was 9-year-old Kim. But I was not truthful with them on everything that I knew, all of my skill sets that I brought from California. Like, I was just like, yeah, I know how to do division. And then they gave me the division test, and they were like, wait, like, you clearly know way more than what you're leading on. So that is the beginning of my journey. I spent a lot of my young years, and I was a bookworm too. Sorry, let me just like slip this in. I was a bookworm. I loved reading. I still do. I still love reading. But I would just like, I would have my head in a book always, which is why I believe my reading level was so high. But I became, once I moved to South Florida, so South Florida Kim was extremely shy. I've always been introverted, but the introversion like went to a different level at this point, a completely different level. I was shy. I would talk so quietly that people sitting next to me couldn't even hear what I was saying. I would basically whisper. Like, it was bad. It was bad. I spent my entire childhood from South Florida on shrinking, which was no easy feat, because at the age of 12, I was like 6'1". So, like, and I remained 6'1". Some people try to say I'm 6'2". I rebuke that extra inch. I only say that I'm 6'1". So I don't know. But I spent the next 20 years shrinking from the spotlight, shrinking from others, just like I turned into myself, turned inward. I'm talking about the ultimate self-critic. I would like keep a running tab, guys. And this actually started from when I was in California, when I started with the bullying. I would keep a running tab of all the things that were wrong with me. And like, as I identified new things, I would like add them. So it was like, I'm fat, I'm too tall, my hair is short. Like, just, this is what I did. And it was a result of my father, the abandonment issues, being bullied at school incessantly. Just, that was the first, I would say the first 35 years of my life was like shrinking. And trying to not shine and trying to not stand out, which is really hard to do when you're really tall and when you actually are intelligent. Like, I am an intelligent person, but it's like I couldn't show it. And I have enough drive, and I had my mother there, my mother who was like my biggest cheerleader. So I never really fully shrink all the way down to the point that I, you know, self-sabotage my way to like getting D's and F's. No. Like, I was still going to be smart. I was still going to be, you know, the head of my class. I just wasn't going to be number one. And I just wasn't going to stand out. I also got bullied here, in middle school. So middle school was really hard for me. 'Cause middle school is hard for like everyone. And I know that now as a pediatrician. Middle school is difficult, but for me, because I was so tall and because I was like really awkward, I was overweight. I got bullied really, really, really bad. And so that made me just shrink even more. So that is like my story up until middle. I mean, you could basically say middle high school college. I felt like every time I made friends, I wasn't sure whether or not they would stick around because of my earlier experiences with having friends that then turned on me. It led to a lot of insecurity within my friendships. It was just, I mean, I have stories for days, but this podcast has already been almost 45 minutes. So there is going to have to be a part two. And in part two, I want to talk to you about my imposter syndrome and how that led me through college and medical school, residency. Whoo, child, residency was something else. And what I began to do to turn that around and to really change my mindset. And I did it by changing my actions. There is a positive end to this story, guys. The fact that I'm sitting here talking into this microphone is a testament to the positive way that this was able to turn around. However, it was rough. It was a rough 35 years. and when I was 34 actually was when my mother unfortunately passed away. So I'll talk about all of that in part two of my first Profiles and Purpose episode. So really quick, thank you guys. If you lasted this long, like again, you're my people, you're in the squad. This is a long episode and there's more to come, but I really do think it's important for you to understand where I'm coming from so that you can understand where I am now. I am not the same person that I was for the first 35 years of my life. I am completely changed. And I thank God every day for the transformation. And it has been a result of therapy, lots of therapy. Get a therapist, guys. Hashtag you need a therapist. So therapy, as a result of lots and lots of prayer, both on the part of myself, my family, the prayers of my mother, that even though she's passed away, I think her prayers are still what's sustaining me. And really like changing my habits, changing my routines. And that's why I'm really excited about my habit building masterclass that I conducted last night. So head on over to productivepurpose.com so you can download your free copy of the habit building workbook. And then also you can watch the replay of the masterclass. Because that's how I was able to change my mindset. And this entire podcast is going to be me talking with you about how you can overcome your struggles, your anxieties, your imposter syndrome, your procrastination. But take the next step and go ahead and download the masterclass so you can kind of get started. I will see you next week where I will talk about part two of my journey up until this point. I love you guys. Thank you so much for being here. And I'll see you next time. Peace and love.
Thank you for listening to the Productive on Purpose podcast. Now, take the next step. Head on over to www.productivepurpose.com to download your free Planning for Procrastinators workbook. It's time to start walking in our purpose, y'all. I'll catch you on the next episode.